Welcome to Breaking It Down with D'Anthony, with your host, Devin Anthony. Welcome to the latest edition of Breaking It Down with D'Anthony. Basically, every league is playing right now. I love it. It's awesome. So many games to watch. So, a lot to talk about because of all those games. So, let's just jump right into it. Starting off with the NBA. After a Game 5 win to close out the series against the Blazers team that lost Damian Lillard to injury in Game 4, the Lakers were definitely caught off guard by a Rockets team who had won a very close series with Oklahoma City Thunder that went all 7 games and came down to a final Rockets defensive play and a block from James Harden in the last seconds to push Houston into the second round of the playoffs. I mean, Chris Paul really has just put the team on his back this season. You got to give him credit where credit's due. And you know, I think there was a stat where the Thunder had less than 1% chance of making the playoffs. Not only did they make a playoffs, but they made a pretty good run as well, and it took 7 games for Houston to knock them off in the first round. But now looking at the Lakers and the Houston series going on right now, the Lakers went into Game 1 against the Rockets following a 43-point performance from Anthony Davis and 36 from LeBron in Game 5 in the Portland series. But the Lakers had not played for a little bit under a week, while the Rockets were coming off a hard-fought Game 7 just 2 nights prior. However, it was not the rest of the team that was in control, as Houston's confidence rolled over to Game 1 as well, beating the Lakers by 15. LeBron had 20 points and Anthony Davis had 25 points and 14 rebounds, but it wasn't enough to outlast the Rockets team, led by James Harden, who had 36, Russell Westbrook with 24, and Eric Gordon with 23. Things quickly turned around in Game 2, as LeBron James probably had his best performance so far in the bubble, getting it done on both ends of the court. Not only did he have 28 points, 9 assists, and 11 rebounds, but he also had 2 monstrous blocks. Anthony Davis was very efficient on offense as well, dropping 34 points on 15 for 24 shooting. The return of Rajon Rondo has also been instrumental for this Lakers team, who needed a smart guard who can control the tempo of the game. LeBron kind of had to take that role against the Blazers in that series and all the games leading up to the playoffs in the bubble. And now that LeBron can kind of, you know, hand that over to Rondo, where Rondo kind of controls the tempo of the game, LeBron's playing a little bit more off ball, and he's definitely able to produce more offensively while still rebounding the ball well, shooting the ball well, and making good passes as well. But Rajon Rondo, back to him, he contributed 10 points and 9 assists in the Lakers win in Game 2, and he had a game-changing 21 points on 8 for 11 shooting, along with 9 assists in another Lakers win in Game 3. LeBron had an even better game than he did in Game 2, which is pretty impressive considering how well he did in Game 2. Game 3, he poured in 36 points, along with 4 huge blocks on the defensive end. I've never seen anything like this man. He's in his 17th season, you know, and he's getting it done both ends of the court, you know, going up and down, 94 feet plays, you know, rebound all the way in for a layup, dunks, alley-oops, you know, blocks on both, you know, insane block, you know, kind of like the block he had in the finals against the Warriors and Andre Iguodala, like those chase down blocks. His athletic ability is something like I've never seen before, and it's what makes him the best player in the league right now. But he's going to have to keep up this two-way play. It has to remain consistent, especially against a strong team like the Clippers, if they do end up meeting them in the Western Conference Finals in the next round. LeBron James did pass Derek Fisher for most playoff wins in NBA history after the Game 3 win, but LeBron is not stopping there as he's hunting for his 4th ring. He is a man on a mission, and it's going to take a lot to bring him down. The Lakers were successful in Game 4 as well and had a big lead for most of the game until the Rockets got it within 5 in the last minute, but a Caruso 3 and a LeBron dunk off the backboard from Rondo sealed the game for the Lakers as they went up 3-1. The Lakers out-rebounded the Rockets 52-26, which resulted in LA shooting 88 shots compared to Houston's 65. With those numbers, there is basically no possible way to lose the game, especially when shooting 49% from the field. Anthony Davis poured in 26 points as LeBron and Caruso added 16 each. And Rondo was great once again with 11 points, 10 rebounds, and 8 assists. Moving on to the Clippers versus Nuggets, which is the other matchup going on in the Western Conference right now. The Clippers have definitely seemed like the better and more dominant team in that series. But, I mean, the Nuggets are hanging right there with them, down 3-2 in the series. Jamal Murray has definitely put that team on his back, putting up 26 in a 16-point comeback in Game 5 and 27 in Denver's 9-point win over the Clippers in Game 2. Jokic has been playing well as well, and Michael Porter Jr., who's technically a rookie from Missouri after not playing last year. But I do think the Clippers will end up closing out the series. I mean, just much more experienced, better team, a lot more veterans who, you know, know how to get it done in the playoffs. And you have the reigning finals MVP on your team in Kawhi Leonard. But, I mean, the Nuggets are a young and resilient team that are definitely not going to go out with a fight. So I think the end of that series will be close. It'll be competitive, but I think the Clippers are going to end up moving on to the Western Conference Finals. Moving on to the other side of the NBA, the first overall seed Milwaukee Bucks were upset by the Miami Heat 4-1. Giannis was injured in Game 4, and the Heat closed out in Game 5. From the first tip of Game 1, Jimmy Butler put the league on notice, leading his team while dropping 40 points in Game 1 and 30 points in Game 3. Everyone in the Heat starting five has contributed, and rookie Tyler Hero has been solid off the bench as well. Goran Dragic, Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, Jay Crowder, and Duncan Robinson, who is the Heat starting five, have all played big minutes and each are scoring in the double digits almost every game. The Heat are a very balanced team that work well together and are a very difficult matchup for any team in the league right now. They'll face the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals, who just came off a Game 7 win against the defending champions Toronto Raptors. The Celtics had gone up 2-0 in that series and would have gone up 3-0 if it wasn't for an OG Anunoby buzzer beater in Game 3. The Raptors took Game 4 as well and would tie the series again in Game 6 to push the series to a Game 7. Game 7 was an absolute battle between the two teams, and both did a great job defensively. Jason Tatum, who is emerging as one of the best players in the league, got it done on both ends of the court and poured in 29 points to go along with 12 rebounds. Just 22 years old, Tatum has a very bright future ahead of him, and he's going to have to lead his team again to knock off a very strong Miami team that can shoot well and is very strong defensively. Tatum does have a great supporting cast around him in Kemba Walker, who is a great leader on the court, Marcus Smart, who made first-team all-defense, and Jaylen Brown, who is also a great two-way player, and he had 21 points in Game 7. Moving on to the little baseball talk, the Dodgers have completely asserted their dominance in the league this year so far and sit four games ahead the second-place A's. The Dodgers have won 32-45 games, and former MVP Mookie Betts has recorded 14 home runs, which is the fourth most in the league this year. The 27-year-old has definitely shown why he is worth such a massive contract extension, which is around $365 million, and will definitely be a main factor for the Dodgers' success come playoff time. On the other side of the league, the Yankees, who were the favorites to win the AL this year, have fell to the middle of the league standings and sit just above 500. They have lost their two stars, Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge, to injury, which have been a huge loss for their team, offensively for sure, but there has to be a major turnaround for this team that's definitely going in the wrong direction to make themselves contenders again. I haven't said this in a while, but let's talk some football. After a great season of Hard Knocks featuring the intense training camps of the Rams and Chargers, the NFL regular season is underway. The Super Bowl champions Kansas City Chiefs knocked out the Houston Texans 34-20 in a Thursday night game that made life feel a little bit more normal. 16,000 fans were in attendance at Arrowhead Stadium, which definitely brought more life to the game than having no fans at all, like there will be with most teams across the league for at least the first couple games. The Raiders and Rams and Chargers will not get to open their new billion-dollar stadiums to any fans at all, which is a real bummer for the cities of LA and Las Vegas. However, in Kansas City, fans are cheering on their very wealthy and star quarterback Patrick Mahomes, who threw for 211 yards and three touchdowns. The second highest player in the league, so sitting right behind Patrick Mahomes when it comes to contract, Deshaun Watson threw for 253 yards, one touchdown, and one interception. It definitely wasn't the most ideal game for the former Clemson quarterback, who just signed a four-year, $160 million contract extension. So Mahomes signed a $500 million contract extension. Not all that's guaranteed. I think only $140 million of that is guaranteed right now. But again, that's a 10-year deal. Deshaun Watson is in, he signed a four-year deal. You know, you don't know where the Texans are going to be in the next 4 years. Can they actually make a good playoff push in those next 4 years? You know, they got rid of DeAndre Hopkins. They traded him. They did get David Johnson out of that, who I think is going to be a good running back and played pretty well against the Chiefs at over 70 yards, I believe. But I think it's a smart move for Deshaun Watson, the Texans, you know, to kind of bring him down for this next 4 years. I think he's definitely going to start getting into his prime. He was one of the best quarterbacks in the league last year. Definitely was one of the front runners for MVP and definitely will this year as well. To be that young and to be the second highest paid player in the league, it was so fun just watching Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes go off, you know, battle against each other. There was one moment where Deshaun Watson was running out of bounds and sat next to Patrick Mahomes, you know, gave him a little pat, and they moved on with the game. But those two young quarterbacks are going to be awesome to watch in the foreseeable future. Although Tyrann Mathieu played great on the defensive end for Kansas City on the Thursday night game with 8 tackles, it was the rookie running back Clyde Edwards-Helaire out of LSU who was the star of the game. He ran for 138 yards and one touchdown and 25 carries, and he was just electric throughout the game. And I know it's only the first game of the season, but to me, he already seems like a clear front runner to win Rookie of the Year this season. You know, He went first round in most fantasy leagues. He is definitely going to be a huge offensive weapon for Kansas City, and it honestly feels like a steal of the draft for Kansas City to pick him up. So I think he's going to be huge for them. Finally, Kansas City has a reliable running back that they can count on in big games, in addition to, you know, the best quarterback in the league in Patrick Mahomes. Sammy Watkins had a good game. Tyreek Hill had a few catches. Travis Kelce had a good game. I mean, their offensive weapons are, you know, probably the best in the AFC. But then you look at the best team offensively in the NFC, and you have to talk about the Buccaneers. They will take on the Saints at what would be a very high-scoring first game. Should be a very high-scoring first game for both teams. The Buccaneers have recently signed Leonard Fournette to a one-year deal, who was waived by Jacksonville after they were unable to trade him. Leonard Fournette seems really happy about the deal and is very excited to finally get to play with an elite quarterback in Tom Brady. You know, the quarterback situation in Jacksonville has kind of, you know, been all over the place in the last couple of years, at least since Leonard Fournette's been there. So I think you got to be thrilled to play with the GOAT, you know, six rings and hopefully going to get a seventh in Tampa Bay. And I think Leonard Fournette sees that and wants to be a part of that. So definitely worked out well for him. Tampa Bay's offensive weapons, you know, they're a scary sight for opposing secondaries, and I think they'll probably be the best team in the league offensively. You know, you look at them versus the Chiefs, I think that'd be an awesome Super Bowl. Do I think both teams are going to get there? No, there's, you know, we're in unprecedented times. Anything could happen this year. But I don't, you know, the Buccaneers are, you know, they're not, there's so many new pieces, we don't know what to expect from them. They have a defense, you know, that's pretty questionable, and that's going to have to step up to allow the Bucs to win games, because frankly their defense was one of the worst in the league last year. But because they lack a reliable defense but still have an elite offense on the other side, I think the Bucs will go 9-7 during the regular season, which will definitely give them a spot in the playoffs. Granted, the Rams were, I believe, 9-7 last year, didn't make the playoffs, but I think, you know, the NFC is just filled with talent. I think Tom Brady, you know, having to play more NFC teams this year, you know, in a harder division with Carolina, Atlanta, and New Orleans. I mean, it's definitely a harder division than playing against the Bills, the Jets, and the Dolphins like he has his whole career in New England. So that's automatically, you know, a much harder six games in the season that, you know, I don't think the Bucs are not a gimme. You know, not the strongest defense, as I said earlier. But the weapons they have offensively will make them an elite team this year. I mean, I can't remember the last time the Buccaneers were good. Not in the last couple of years, at least. I know they won a Super Bowl in the early 2000s with John Gruden. But, you know, they're hoping to get back to that stage. They want to make a deep run in the playoffs. And who knows how much time Tom Brady has left in his career. If he has a great season this year, he can play for another 3 years. I mean, the dude's old. But, I mean, as long as he's playing well, his body's in good shape, then why not? You know, he's reunited with his buddy Gronk. It's almost like the Buccaneers have great, you know, great players at each position. And there's two of them as well. So you have running backs. You have Leonard Fournette and Ronald Jones, you know, two great options for running back there. Wide receivers, you got Chris Godwin and Mike Evans. Two great receivers, probably two of the best receivers in the league. Top five, top ten for sure. And then tight ends, you got Gronk and O.J. Howard, who, you know, are going to be huge when it comes to blocking and also, you know, making big runs down the field. And having two experienced tight ends, you know, strong tight ends who know how to play the game well, I think it's definitely going to help Brady. And I know I've talked about this in previous podcasts before, but Brady has never had offensive weapons like this. You know, he had great teams in New England, but nothing like this. And so, granted, we don't know exactly what to expect from Tampa Bay this year. But I think it'll be a lot of fun to watch them. We've never seen anything like this, at least in Tom Brady's career. And you know what? I'm gonna say 10-6. I'm gonna change that from 9-7. I think 9-7's not good enough for them. I think they'll go 10-6, maybe even 11-5, but 10-6 seems reasonable for sure. Moving on to the English Premier League, I'll give you some of my predictions for this year. We should be in for a great season in the English Premier League this year. That's for sure. I know that for sure. West Brom, Fulham, and Leeds United are the three new teams in the league this year because of their promotion from the Championship. I think Leeds will be successful in the league this year after a monstrous season in the championship last year, and the new signing of Rodrigo from Spanish side Valencia will definitely be a big help for them on the attacking side. I don't think West Brom will keep their spot in the league as they are nowhere near the level of the top 10 teams of the league, but I do think Fulham will escape relegation. The new signing of French goalkeeper Alphonse Areola will definitely have a huge impact on the team defensively as he is a goalie who has played at the top level for the last couple of years with PSG and Real Madrid respectively. Fulham take on FA Cup champions Arsenal, who I expect to get back into the top six this year, as they have definitely looked more promising in their last couple games. Leeds will open their season with defending champs Liverpool, who did not make any big signings since the end of the season. A team that did make big signings, however, was Chelsea. They added Timo Werner, Kai Havertz, Hakim Ziyech, and Thiago Silva, which each of them probably will be in the starting lineup. Five huge signings for them, or four huge signings for them. Defense, you got Thiago Silva, who has a lot of experience, has played. He played in the Champions League final with PSG. He knows what it takes, is a great leader back there. But the goalkeeper position is still a little bit iffy. You have Kepa and Wilfried Caballero. Caballero is a little bit older. Kepa doesn't make the best decisions. So they weren't able to pick up a new goalkeeper. Hopefully, the amount of offensive production will cancel that out with their defensive woes. But I think Chelsea are definitely one of the favorites to win the league this year. A top three as well, at least, in my opinion. But I think Man City will regroup and will ultimately take back the league. So kind of my top four, I think it will be Man City in first, Liverpool second, Chelsea third, and Manchester United in fourth. Man United did look great towards the end of last season, but they missed out on a lot of big signings over the summer and were only able to pick up Ajax's Donny van de Beek. He will be a great addition to the Man United midfield, but that doesn't help the struggling Manchester United defensive line. That being said, the league is definitely up for grabs this year and should be one of the most exciting seasons we've seen in a while. All right, we're going to wrap up the show today with some NHL playoff talk, starting off with Tampa Bay Lightning versus the New York Islanders in the Eastern Conference Finals. The Lightning moved on to the Eastern Conference Finals after an impressive 4-1 series win over President's Trophy winners, Boston Bruins, and the Islanders, their opponent, who went all seven games against the Philadelphia Flyers. Tampa clearly are the better team in this matchup and won Game 1 with a dominant 8-2 win. However, in the Western Conference, you've definitely got a tighter matchup with two very high-energy, powerful teams. Dallas is led by forwards Tyler Seguin and Joe Pavelski and defender John Klingberg, who scored the lone goal in Game 1 in the Western Conference Finals to put the Stars up 1-0 over the Vegas Golden Knights. Both teams are coming off an epic series that went all seven games, as Dallas knocked off Colorado 5-4 in overtime in Game 7, and Vegas beat Vancouver 3-0 in Game 7 despite the immense efforts of the Canucks goaltender Thatcher Demko, who made a total of 123 saves in the last three games of that series. Backup goaltender as well, filling in for starter Jacob Markstrom, and I've never seen a performance like this from a goaltender in the playoffs, at least in my lifetime. And, just the sheer courage and bravery going up against such a pressuring and offensive-minded Vegas team, and how well he played I don't think anyone saw that coming. And had his first playoff start in Game 5 as well against the Knights, and only let up one goal in that Game 5, had a shutout in Game 6, and then only let up one goal in Game 7 as the two other goals were empty nets. But you got to give credit to Vegas defenseman Shea Theodore, was the only one who could score on Thatcher Demko, had Vegas's lone goal in Game 5 and the first goal in Game 7 prior to Alex Tuch and Paul Stastny empty net goals. But Vegas has run into another well-performing goaltender, Anton Khudobin of Dallas, who had a shutout in Game 1 against the Knights and 38 saves in a Game 3 win as well. Vegas goaltender Robin Lehner has been elite as well, recording four shutouts in the playoffs so far. It is clear that he is head coach Peter DeBoer's number one choice at the goaltender position over Marc-Andre Fleury, and the Vegas Golden Knights will definitely do their best to re-sign Lehner over the offseason. The Knights are coming off a 3-2 loss in overtime and are looking to tie the series up at 2 apiece, but the Knights absolutely have to take advantage of easy scoring opportunities that they've unfortunately missed out on repeatedly. They're going to have to do that if they want to move on to the Stanley Cup Final. Based on how the series has been going so far, I definitely wouldn't be surprised for this series to go seven games as well. I think it'll be a very exciting finish to the series because ultimately everything's on the line. It's a spot in the Stanley Cup in probably the craziest playoffs we've seen in a very long time. One, because of the bubble, and two, because of all the reseeding that took place. You know, Vegas should have had the third seed in the playoffs and instead got the first because of the round robin games with Colorado, St. Louis, and Dallas. So it definitely gave them an easier path to make it to the Western Conference Finals. You know, going up against a Chicago team that was the 12th seed in playoff qualifying, and in a Vancouver team that was the 6th seed in the playoff qualifying. And they've definitely come up against the hardest team they faced yet in Dallas. Dallas is a very strong team, a very deep team that hits well. And it's almost like Knights and how much they pressure. They do make some defensive mistakes, which the Knights did capitalize on in game two, winning 3-0 in that game. But I think, you know, in terms of a great matchup, this is what defines a great matchup. It's between Dallas and Vegas, just because of how evenly matched the two teams are. And it looks like, you know, Tampa's up 2-1 in the series right now against New York. It looks like Tampa's going to end up winning that series. And I think, you know, either a Tampa-Dallas Stanley Cup or a Vegas and Tampa matchup, either would be very exciting just because of the sheer power of both teams. So that's all I got for you guys today. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll see you soon.